really hoping that I would be coming after somebody who would give a really, really bad talk, but the misfortune of being prefaced by Robin's very nice talk. Okay, so I did, this talk has been entirely written just for this conference, so it's tailored to the description that was given for the themes of the conference, and I focused in on the word, is the quantum state, does it represent relational degrees of freedom or absolute degrees of freedom? So I'm going to try and say something on this. So this isn't a major research program of mine, but it stems from just a little thought that I had a while back, which is that there are some strong similarities between the problems of observables in general relativity, viewed as a gauge system, where you have gauge invariant and gauge non-invariant quantities, and the problems of observables and the problem of measurement that we find in quantum theory. So I'm going to just try and expand on this little thought a bit in this talk. Okay, so what I'm going to say first, some relations to a few of the other talks that we've seen. Did you need that? You've all got it. You can see the palimpsest kind of thing underneath anyway. So including the previous talk, especially the idea that there might be something, what we see, the world of objects and events, might not be what is actually going on. And it also relates back to David Merman's talk, where he suggested that we may be reifying things in physics, things that don't really exist, we're treating them as real. So what I'm going to suggest is that this is the case with respect to objects, individual particular objects that bear properties, and that a lot of the problems in quantum mechanics stem from this basic assumption. And it's an assumption that even those people who claim to espouse relational approaches and correlational approaches, they buy into this basic assumption too, because the relations are viewed as relations between subsystems. So Chris Fuchs began his talk the other day by giving an example. So he said, I mean, look at the way we model objects, we model systems in quantum mechanics. You know, you take two objects, you represent them on Hilbert space, H1 and H2, and you consider the joint system by looking at the tensor product, and this gives you a third space, H3, and you can consider entangled states on this space, and then ask, well, what happens if we do something to the object represented by this space? Well, we can do things to the object represented by this other space. And then his niggling worry was, well, hang on, why don't we say really that there's just one object there rather than two objects? And he went back to say, well, hang on, no, there's something wrong with that, because I initially set it up in terms of there being two objects, so we can't really say that. Well, I'm saying that the fact that we set it up, what I'm going to be suggesting, sketching, is that the fact that we set it up like this doesn't necessarily mean that this is the way things are. And we get into a lot of problems by supposing that that objects like this do decompose into individual specific subsystems that bear properties. So this talk, because it's a very recent piece of work, is basically built from an awful lot of quotations to try and develop the sort of view that I think might work. So so the talk will be brief, but it might not be painless, because this is not very well thought out yet. Okay, so this should give us pause for thought. This and the fact that the Koch and Spector theorems, the fact that we don't have unique decompositions, also the fact that we have funny kind of permutation symmetries with quantum systems that seem to take something from the individuality of objects, seems to suggest the fact that objects might not be fundamental after all, and there might be things that we have reified. Okay, so I'll begin with a quote that I like that brings this idea of reification out that David Berman was talking about. So he says, and this is from his book on space, time, and gravitation. He says, "We found that where a science has progressed the farthest, the mind has but regained from nature that which the mind put into nature. We found a strange footprint on the shores of the unknown. We've devised profound theories, one after another, to account for its origins. At last, we have succeeded in reconstructing the creature that made the footprint, and lo, it is our own." So I think this is the case with objects. We're so used to thinking of objects. It's a fundamental part of our conceptual scheme. All of our theories are built from the premise that there are individual objects that bear properties and enter into the relations. But this, it seems to me, is what gets us into a lot of trouble, not just in quantum physics, but in gauge theories and general relativity, too. And I'll be mentioning some of these problems from gauge theory and general relativity as well. Sorry? Oh, did I not say? This is Arthur Eddington. So this second quote is from his book on philosophy of physical science. This makes the point that I want to make rather well. So he says that the significance of a part cannot be dissociated from the system of analysis to which it belongs. As a structural concept, the part is a symbol having no properties except as a constituent of the group structure of a set of parts, a structure which does not necessarily imply an X of which it is the structure. Okay, so the idea is that just because you've got some structure that might be represented by some state like this, it doesn't mean to say that it has to have come from some set of parts that have properties that generated this particular structure. Okay, do you know who that is? Very good. You should know this, because I stole this from Chris's email things. It's Whitehead, A.N. Whitehead. So A.N. Whitehead has this approach based on processes and events. I'm not going to call the philosophy of organism. I'm not defending that, but there are elements of his philosophy that I do like. I'm not going to read it all, just this bit. So his view is that there's no hylomorphic structure. That means a metaphysics where you've got matter that takes on properties, that takes on forms. To the actual entities in this ontology, there is not something that endures, material substance, and something which the enduring thing has, properties that can change. So his idea was precisely that the idea that there is this external world of objects, and these are the fundamental things, is to commit what he calls the fallacy of misplaced concreteness, which is to say, reification. Do you have any idea, Chris, if you do know this, why he uses dentistry examples all the time? Because I don't know whether you know this, but there's a word up there, prehension and concrescence, which are dental terms. So why on earth is that? It's true. Prehension is gripping with the teeth, and concrescence is where two teeth merge into one tooth. It's bizarre. Why? Where's it from? Anyway. Yes, exactly. That's why it's so bad. Okay. So I told you there was a lot of quotes. So this is Wigner, and he sets up, again, I'm not going to go through all of this. He sets up in opposition, so he's talking about the problem of interpretation of quantum mechanics and the measurement problem. And he sets up in opposition two views. He says, we can either say that quantum mechanics furnishes us with correlations between subsequent observations, and these correlations are in general only statistical. Or we can say that the wave function, or more generally the state vector, is a description of the physical reality. So what I want to say is that the correlations, and I mean correlations more generally than the way we usually think of correlations. So we usually think of a correlation as just something like that, right? The probability of A given another event B is different from the probability of the event on its own. So what I want to consider as well are correlations of the form that we find in general relativity, where we take on board the relational localization in that theory. Okay, so we might have a pair of quantities, A and B, and the idea there is that they don't make any sense localized at points of the manifold, for example, but they do make sense when you take a correlation between the two. So the thought is that what quantum mechanics and what gauge theories like general relativity lead us to is the idea that it's these kind of quantities, these relational quantities, that are fundamental. But that does not mean that they supervene on any properties of the parts, that there's some subsystem, some objects that underlie these relations that are giving rise to the correlation. And in this way, we evade things like the Koch and Speker theorem and the no-go theorems of Cabello et al., where they're saying, well, look, we can do things like Bell's theorem even on correlations. Because as I'll say, those no-go theorems only make sense if we suppose that there are individual systems that are having these correlations as properties, as local properties. Okay, so I really liked this interpretation. This is Ithaca. So, is it not? I typed in Google, Ithaca. Google is rubbish. Sorry? That's not Ithaca. Is that you, though? Okay. So the Ithaca interpretation was premised on the view that only correlations have physical reality and that which they correlate does not. But it didn't really quite say that, because it still relied on the fact that there were some subsystems where they had properties independently of the correlation or not. There were some subsystems that had or bore these correlations as objective, local objective properties. That's what caused all the troubles with the no-go theorems. Okay, but the basic idea I like, as long as we take away this business of there being individual systems underlying the correlations. And it's kind of, this is the problem, the fact that the correlations are held to be between subsystems. I mean, if we agree with the fact that correlations are fundamental and irreducible and objective, then we don't get the kinds of problems. Okay. Okay. So this is the claim that really causes that allows the Bell no-go theorems to take hold on this view. Right? The fact that subsystem density matrices as objective are taken to be an objective characterization of their internal properties. Right? That suggests something underlying them. So Einstein, quantum theory isn't a mental description of physical reality. Bohr, yes it is. Mermin, well, yes it is-ish, because the fact that we have systems underlying the correlations, but whose properties we can't access, leads this to also be incomplete in a sense. Okay, and it actually verges on the Kantian. Somebody mentioned the Kantian aspect on the first day. So here we find two very Kantian sentiments. So he says the actual specific values of the correlated quantities in the actual specific world we know are beyond the powers of physics to articulate. And in our description of nature, the purpose is not to disclose the real essence of phenomena, okay, which again is to do with the fact that there are things underlying the correlations. So you immediately place some distance between some limitations on what we can know. An awful lot of quotes, sorry. Now, Carlo Rovelli's relational approach sounds like it might be close to what I'm talking about, too. Okay, so he developed a program called Relational Quantum Mechanics, and it's based on this idea that physics is concerned with relations between physical systems. In particular, it's concerned with the description that physical systems give of other physical systems. Again, it's premised, this is kind of Leibnizian version of relationism, where you have some fundamental set of objects to begin with that you're considering relations between. Now, this is Rudolf Haag. Well, you might not expect to be saying things quite like this, but he gets very close. So he says, this is from his book on local quantum physics, an event is regarded as the realization of an individual fact, and thus an element of reality, whereas a state subsumes the probability assignment for the realization of a pattern of future events. It's not an element of reality. And this is the point. The correlations are of such a nature that they cannot be attributed to correlations between assumed states of subsystems, but only as correlations between the events themselves. Okay, so this sounds a lot like what, well, I'll argue later, what we find in general relativity when it's viewed through the lens of Rovelli's partial and complete observables approach. So the idea is that the partial observables, so a partial observable is defined as something, a quantity that you can associate a measurement procedure that will lead to a number. Okay, so an observable in the quantum mechanics, in the Bell sense. And the complete observable is a correlation between two partial observables. And it can be determined by the theory. So it's like a Beeble, it's an element of reality. So what I'll be saying is that we ought to be, if we're going to be realist about anything, we ought to be realist about the complete observables, but not view them as decomposable into things like partial observables, which Rovelli does. Rovelli says that the partial observables are the thing with the most, the greatest physical interpretation. Right? We ought to invest these with physical reality. Finally, you've got to throw a Wittgenstein quote in, I think. This is from the Tractatus. Again, the same kind of idea. Okay, it's essential to a thing that it can be a constituent part of an atomic fact. You can't have things that aren't entering into some kind of relation, but that doesn't mean that things can be considered ever independently of that relation. Ah, I forgot I had a Zarek one. I found this just the other day. I was very excited. So here we find, properties of quantum systems have no absolute meaning. Rather, they must always be characterized with respect to other physical systems. Correlations between properties of quantum systems are more basic than the properties themselves. Okay, so if that's true, then, and again, Zarek makes the same kind of, well, I think it's a mistake, as Rovelli and the others I've mentioned. Namely, the idea is that you do have systems there, but their properties are determined by some correlations. But that's a very strange metaphysic. That sounds like you've got a bare substance, right? Like a pincushion that takes on all these properties. That's not a very good thing to be saying. Okay, so here's the basic idea of the correlation view. We have an apparatus, we have a system. The apparatus can be in three states, up, neutral, down. We start it in neutral. We have a two-state system, an electron that can be spin up, spin down. We consider the joint state first, where they're not interacting, which we write like that on the left, top left. We let them interact. We evolve them, and we find the final state. We get an entangled state, final state. Of course, if we prepare the electron in a superposition of its states, and then follow the same procedure, we end up with a superposition. We should end up with a superposition of states of the apparatus as well, which is obviously not what we find when we make a measurement. So the correlation view just takes the fact that we get these correlations out of these procedures as fundamental, what physics is about. Physics is about these joint probabilities that you see here. And nothing else. That's all it can tell us about. So it's a kind of, it is basically a relative state interpretation, but a slightly different version. Okay, correlations are taken to be the real thing. So we have things like, if a measurement, if an electron is spin up or down, then we will necessarily get that result on the apparatus, then the apparatus will necessarily register spin up, spin down. So it's not about the results of measurements of this composite, it's about the correlations themselves. Okay, so we end up with states like this at the bottom. This is what a merging of Everett and Mermin looks like, by the way. This is Hugh D. Mermeret, the third. Okay, so one of the problems with this, of course, the previous state, is that you can, we can write these kinds of states, these singlet states, in a variety of ways. One way is in this basis, spin up, spin down. But we can just as well write it like this. Okay, so these individual terms are clearly not the same. But taken together, as whole states, these are the same. Okay, they're equal. Which I think is a virtue of the correlation here. Okay, these are taken to be, these different decompositions are taken to be identical on this correlation here. Now that ought to tell us, if we're going to go down this path, that ought to tell us something about the subsystems. There's something funny about the subsystems. We can take these things to be identical. But if we view the correlations as local objective properties of subsystems, then we face these fairly conclusive results. I think they're conclusive of Curbelo, and I think there've been other versions of these. So he argues that the free defining assumptions of this correlations view—the idea that correlations are fundamental and that they're local objective properties of their subsystems—they can't all be held together. Okay, so the first assumption is that density matrices describe all internal correlations of an isolated individual quantum system, no external correlations. All correlations between subsystems of an isolated composite system are real objective internal properties of such subsystems. That's the problem. And real objective internal properties of an isolated system must be local. They can't be altered by doing measurements on some faraway system. Okay. Curbelo has also shown that you can't have the idea that all of the information of the subsystems is contained in the initial state. Okay, so I'll quickly go through this. So here's the usual situation. We prepare a series of electrons in the singlet state. We fire them out. We look at the statistics. We find that they violate, make a measurement, and we find that they violate a Bell inequality. Okay, so what Curbelo did was to, he describes it as showing that correlations themselves violate Bell inequalities. So you can't view the correlations as local objective properties either, because you can do the same things to particles, to correlations that you can do to the particles. Really annoying, this remote. So what's the answer? Well, don't view correlations as real objective properties. But if we say that, if we say that the correlations are brute or fundamental in some sense, then we face the standard objection. Okay, this is an objection that so-called structural realists often face. So structural realists believe that all there is to the world is the invariant structure, and everything else is derived from the structure. Well, they face the problem that, well, hang on, how can you have a structure without something of which it is a structure, some set of objects giving rise to the relations that make up the structure? How can you have relations without relata, or correlations without correlata? It's incoherent. So the thought is, if you've got a set of relations, they have to supervene on some properties of the relata. Or you have to have relata in some sense. In actual fact, I think it's a misreading of Mermin's view, because the Ithaca interpretation does involve relata. as subjects of the correlations. But they're unknowable, okay? And they conflict with these no-go theorems. So I think that this interpretation, as I said earlier, fell prey to these no-go theorems precisely because it was based on this premise, the second premise that I showed previously, right? That we have these individual systems underlying the correlations. So the idea here is to adopt a kind of structural realist approach to quantum mechanics, structural quantum mechanics, or SICM, I'll call it. So that's the quantum side of things. Okay, I'm going to be very quick now. So we find a similar kind of problem in general relativity. Okay, so this is a quote from Einstein, a very little known quote. So he says that the gravitational field at a certain location represents nothing physically real, because it's not a diffeomorphism invariant thing. But the gravitational field together with other data does. Okay, so these are my correlations here. Right? Gravitational field, or any quantity you like, the Ricci, the scalar curvature, or anything at a point, is not a physically meaningful quantity, but a correlation between it and some other field value is a physically meaningful quantity. You can't decompose, you can't take the correlation as supervening in any sense on properties of the parts. Right? I'm going to skip that. Just a couple more slides. So Rovelli develops this approach, as I mentioned, between partial and complete observables. So the partial observables are precisely these things here. Right? They're not invariant objects. They're not invariant objects in general relativity, because general relativity is diffeomorphism invariant. Diffeomorphisms move points of the manifold around. So you can't localize points of the manifold. You have to localize relationally by putting physical quantities together, forming correlations. But if only the correlations make physical sense or invariant, then we can't speak of the correlata as having existence, physical reality independently, as the Einstein quote makes clear. But the way Rovelli sets this up is that, okay, so the partial observables amount to the kinematics of the theory, the complete observables, the correlations, amount to the dynamics. And he says that we should treat, this is what strikes me as odd, we should treat the kinematics as elements of reality, ignore that. And the dynamics, also as elements of reality. He doesn't make any distinction. He says that the partial observables should be viewed with the most physical meaning. Well, I say that's not right. We should, given what I've said here, we should treat the partial observables as rather like the things underlying the correlations in quantum mechanics. And they only make sense, they only have physical meaning when they're brought into correlations. Okay? So he says the extended configuration space has a direct physical interpretation of the space of partial observables. I say that's wrong. Okay? These are all quotes that I mentioned previously. So the idea is to view objects the same way one views space and time. Okay, how you draw coordinate surfaces through space and time is a matter of paperwork and bookkeeping and has nothing to do with the real physics. Right? So an example of reification. Similarly, with the decomposition of quantum states into individual objects. Came up with a word for the object that's described by this, which is complexus, which means that it just can't be divided. It's an embrace. I'm going to finish now with a quick analogy. This is nearly it. So forget design. We've done that. Forget space. Forget time. But also forget object. So here's a final example. This is it. So the Beatles, taken individually as subsystems, we might quibble with John Lennon, had no physical significance. It's certainly true of Ringo Starr. But it was only together, the correlational quantity, that had physical reality. They were the Beebles, and the clue was there all along in the name, of course. I don't know how we missed it.
Okay, questions?
Thanks, Dean. I want to make 2 points. You gave the EPR version of the Cabello argument against the Ithaca interpretation, but I don't think that argument works because he assumes collapse, whereas in the Ithaca interpretation there's no collapse, it's purely unitary. That doesn't hold for his Cochin-Specker version of it, so that might still stand. But anyway, that example doesn't work. Okay. The more substantive point is that I don't think your position really commits you to having to deny that objects exist. So, and I'm not sure you stated the incoherence objection right. It's not that it's incoherent to have relations which don't supervene on properties of subsystems, but it might be incoherent to have relations which don't supervene on the existence of subsystems. Now, I think you can entirely capture your point of view saying there are objects, yet we must deny that they have any non-qualitative properties, and we must deny they have any intrinsic properties.
Right.
So if we have objects as purely bearing external relational properties one to another, then that's perfectly consistent with your view, and I would submit consistent with a kind of Everettian relative state type interpretation of quantum mechanics.
Thanks for that. I was thinking there might be some relation to the Everettian, to the original version of the Everettian relative state interpretation. The problem with the idea, I have a problem with the idea that there are, that you can have objects. So what you're referring to is essentially Michael Esfeld's interpretation of quantum mechanics, I think, where there are no intrinsic properties of objects. I have a problem, it could just be a metaphysical gripe, with the idea of having objects that don't have intrinsic properties of the kind we know, qualitative properties.
Right, well, so think of objects as possible reference of singular terms, and so long as you can use, as long as you can pick out reference via patterns in the structures, then you're going to be okay.
But then you say that these would still be what objects in the then certainly not objects in the ordinary kosher sense.
I think they are. I think objects are nothing other than possible reference of singular terms.
Well, okay. So that sounds like a fairly trivial,
thin
definition
view
of object. Right, obviously, I can. Obviously, I'm still going to be able to refer to objects in the sense of using singular terms, even if this view is correct.
Right. So there's a sense in which we can still get by with object talk, at least.
Right, right, exactly. I don't know. I think it's a basic... The idea of objects like that, it's just too thin a notion of object. You might as well just say that they aren't objects at all and they are just relations. There's so little there left of it. It almost is just relations that you're left with. Right, well, of course that's exactly the point, but the relations are the primary things. And the example I gave of the partial and complete observables was supposed to kind of show that, in this case, the nodes really don't make formal sense independently of the correlation, the complete observable.
Howard Wiseman. To ask a more physics question, I mean, it seemed to me, especially with the list which you put up at the end of all the things that we should forget, that it sounds a lot like Julian Barber's interpretation. Could you comment on that?
In what sense do you think it's like Julian Barber's?
Well, in that he has no time, no space, that all of his degrees of freedom are relational.
But he does have primitive objects. The relations are relations between systems. And I don't think you can call... the idea that it's a timeless interpretation seems a bit strange to me. You have a full space of relative configurations. It's just giving time a different name. You have a full stack of instants in Julian Barber's interpretation. It's got a nonlinear structure, but it's still a hefty amount, and you can still call it time all the same.
Okay. Well, I can't imagine what an even less timeful, and even I can't imagine how you could forget time to an even greater extent and be left with anything, but...
By having, using the examples of quantities like this, okay, so having the idea that you're looking at the gravitational field at a time. Well, a time is just something that you can shift around with the diffeomorphism group. It's not an invariant thing. Right, you have time, but time has to be built up out of the correlations. which is basically Ravelli's evolving constants of motion idea.
David Merman. I have a very little sense of identification with the author of that 15-year-old paper at this point, but I seem to remember that he had in mind throughout the process of trying to put that together the notion that what he was delineating was a kind of limitation on physics, that physics was simply not capable of dealing with correlata. Mm-hmm. But that's stronger than saying correlata don't exist. I mean, somehow there was some vague intuition there. In more recent times, I've started talking about experience. There was this ghost of consciousness hovering over the paper, which conveniently subsumed all difficult questions.
Yeah, well, I mean, I tried to get across the idea that you were placing a limitation on physics by putting the Kant critique kind of example up. So the point is, it's a bit like the difference between epistemic and structural realists. So epistemic says, well, all physics can tell us about are relational structures, but that doesn't mean there isn't some extra structure underneath. Right? We're limited. This was Poincaré's position. So I happen to be an ontic structural realist who says, well, hang on, if all there is relational structure, then you don't need anything else. Physics is telling us about the world as it is.
I think we need to move on to the next speaker, which is Howard Burnham. He's here at the Perimeter Institute, and his research interest is in quantum